Good Saturday morning. Thanks for tuning in to Local Matters on KTLO. This is Heather Loftus, and I got to tell you, it's one of my favorite shows of the year when we always have Mr. Ron Peterson, CEO of Bax Regional Medical Center, in studio with us to kind of close out the year. How are you?
Well, thank you, Heather. I'm doing great, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and to all the great folks at Bax Regional Medical Center. I love talking about our hospital. You know I do. I get excited about it.
Yes, that's so great.
Tell us, we had Barney here a couple weeks ago, and he talked about all the great work that the foundation had done all year long, the work of the volunteers and the donors, and how it just been a tremendous year for them, as always. I told him that's kind of, you know, your tremendous years are kind of standard for you. I mean, that's, we're getting used to it around here. But tell us how the hospital's been doing.
You know, very true about Barney, and we're very fortunate to have a community that supports us, and we are very fortunate. We've had a very good year also at the hospital. Been very busy, been focusing on a lot of different things. I'll talk just briefly about financials first, though. You know, it looks like we're going to end the year with a positive financial bottom line of about $3 million. That sounds like a lot of money. But that's about a 1.6% operating margin, and so that's a very slim operating margin.
Is that common? Is that common in healthcare?
That is pretty common in healthcare. Yes,
okay.
Very common with hospitals, and with the 1.6% operating margin, of course, as a not-for-profit organization, we reinvest that back into the mm-hmm. hospital, and but we are very excited to be able to do that because we are what we call in the Medicare donut hole. And a lot of people don't understand this, and sometimes it gets confusing, so I'll try to keep it relatively simple. But Medicare is one of the lower payers when it comes to insurance companies paying, and Medicare is a government program, so that's why they're one of the lower payers. And we are in both. We have we are one of the highest dependent hospitals on Medicare, in that we have about 70% of our patients, our Medicare patients, at any given time in the hospital. The average hospital in America is about 45%. And then also, everybody probably thinks that Medicare pays all hospitals the same, but they don't. They pay every hospital differently. They pay the kind of by state, but yet it's individual hospitals. And Arkansas is one of the lowest states in the nation. And Baxter Regional Medical Center is one of the lowest paid hospitals in the state. And so we're in the lowest paid and then also the highest percentage nationally. And we call that the Medicare rural donut hole because we're in that hole there of being paid very low but having several of those patients. And that always makes it challenging for us. But we have such good people at the hospital that, you know, we seem to be able to make it financially. And we really could not, though, provide the type of services that we provide if we did not have the support of the community. So that helps.
I know that you and your senior leadership team have traveled across the United States. I mean, you're trying to do what you can from a legislation standpoint to see how we can make changes to help this Medicare donut hole. Is there any progress there, or is there any good news on the horizon?
It's
judging by the face you just gave me, I'm going to say no.
And nobody could see my face, but but you're right. Not a lot of progress. It's mm-hmm. it's very slow. It seems like Medicare at the moment, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, CMS, they are very interested in doing things in a balanced budget format. Mm-hmm. So that means if we look for an increase in ours, that somebody else is looking for a decrease in theirs, and that always causes problems, especially when, as a state, we're one of the lower paid states. Some of the higher paid states are California, New York, Florida, and they just
money talks.
They just have a lot more power in Washington.
70% patient population is of Medicare age, so that's Medicare reimbursement.
That is correct.
Of your 30% that's remaining, how much of that is Medicaid?
About 15% of that is Medicaid. So we are basically 85% government funded.
Yeah. That's scary.
That
because you get directives and initiatives that can change on a whim.
On a whim. Mm-hmm. And what's so amazing is we get them daily. I mean, we really do. And so that does create a challenge. Mm-hmm. And what else we found is we found that the overall admissions per 1,000 nationally is going down. And that's great for people because you're able to get your health care in your home which is better for you. As a hospital administrator, it's mm-hmm. not so great because that means you have fewer patients in the hospital. And if you're in a situation like we were a few years ago, where we saw the population of this area declining and the admissions per 1,000 declining, that created a little issue mm-hmm. because you don't want to get smaller. You want to continue to grow so you can expand and provide more services for people. And so we made a conscious effort to try to expand and go out to communities further away from Mountain Home mm-hmm. and establish clinics in those areas. And so we just this year, we've opened a brand new 12,000 square foot building in Mountain View. We're very excited about that. Dr. Spann is in that clinic, a couple nurse practitioners. We have some areas for physical therapy there. We have x-ray lab. It's just a beautiful building and very excited about that. In addition, we have another nurse practitioner in Dr. Irvin's office located there in Mountain View. And those type of clinics help us expand our footprint so more and more people come to this hospital. So as the number of patients from this area kind of shrinks, we fill that in with patients from other areas. And so we've, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've expanded in about 10 different locations. And this next year coming up in 2019, I'm excited to say that we're going to have a new clinic that's affiliated with this in Hardy, and we're going to have one up in Mammoth Springs.
How has that affected your overall census numbers this year?
You know, our overall census numbers have grown the last 3 years, and that includes this year. And so that's been very helpful. We actually, a few years ago, were closing units mm-hmm. and changing them. We added a adult behavioral health unit, which has been very helpful, I think, to the community in meeting a need. But now we're finding that we have to reopen some units, and that's good. That's good news, mm-hmm. and that's exciting news. And so we had kind of an overflow unit on the second floor, and we found that wasn't quite enough beds, so we moved some offices out of the second floor and created 6 more additional beds on the second floor, and mm-hmm. those are now open. And as a matter of fact, I was up there yesterday, and the unit was full and was doing well.
When you talk about admissions and your overall admissions decreasing, and that was the need for the growth in the secondary markets, that also doesn't mean that we're getting healthier. It just means that we're not being admitted into the hospital. Is that fair to say?
That is extremely fair to say. we need to continue to work on getting healthier. But what has happened is technology has changed. And so there's kind of two factors that go into that. One is, you know, when I was in high school and I had some knee surgery and it was just a scope, but I was in the hospital 4 or 5 days. Mm-hmm. Now that's an outpatient surgery.
It's like 2 hours.
It's like 2 hours. Exactly. And you're home. And so the trend is people don't stay as long, so then you have shorter, but the actual number of people getting admitted don't get admitted. An example is a few years ago, if you had a severe case of pneumonia, you were probably admitted to the hospital. Now the antibiotics can be taken in a pill form instead of IV, and your doctor will see you 2 or 3 times maybe in their mm-hmm. office to make sure you're doing okay, but you're not being admitted to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. I went to my first doctor's visit on my phone this year. Via the Baxter Regional Care app.
Oh, great. And how did that go?
It was amazing. It was one of the, I had a sick kid, ear infection. You knew exactly what it was. It was a cold, nasty, brutal day outside. And I just sat at my kitchen table, had a cup of coffee, and went to the doctor's appointment and said, I think he has an ear infection.
Well, good. And that was easy for you and easy for mm-hmm. your child and worked out well. So that's good. And that's why we have that app 24/7 available.
By dinner time, he was fine. I mean, you know, just a couple of rounds of antibiotics.
Good.
But, you know,
right.
That's exactly what you hope you can see with introducing the app. Those common visits, you know, not if you think you have pneumonia,
exactly.
Obviously you need to go see a physician.
That is correct.
But, I mean, for earaches and the common cold and things like that. I mean, that's what you wanted it for.
That is exactly right. It's kind of what we call our urgent care.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to work very well. And it seems like we hear a lot of comments from people who utilize it. It's interesting. People are saying, oh, I forgot about that. But the ones who utilize it and think about it and have it on their phone and have that app there on the phone, they love it.
Well, unpaid personal recommendation, let me tell you right here.
Well, it was awesome.
I loved it.
I appreciate that.
One other thing that has been big this year that a lot of people at the hospital have been working on, and that's you're working towards MAGNA status. Tell us what that means to our community.
Okay. You know, a lot of people hear that word magnet status and they have no idea what it means, mm-hmm. So I'd love to try to explain. What we want to try to do at Baxter Regional Medical Center is focus on quality and make sure that we're improving quality. And what we noticed was the magnet designation is technically a nursing designation, but it helps the whole hospital really focus on quality. And so there's about roughly 5,000 hospitals in the United States, and there's about 470 magnet hospitals, and they are really top performing hospitals in the United States. And even just to apply for magnet status, there's about 10 or 12 different quality metrics that you have to achieve above the magnet mean in order to apply for it. And you have to achieve that for 2 years in a row. And I'm very proud to say that we were able to show that track and show that we're able to outperform the magnet mean. And so we have sent in our application, and we are looking to hopefully have them come out and survey us this summer and hopefully receive that designation. It's just done so many different things for the hospital.
What quality indicators are they most looking for?
You know, a lot of those quality indicators are nursing quality indicators, and they're like urinary tract infections, bed sores or ulcers, mm-hmm. whatever you want to mm-hmm. call those, and bloodstream infections, those type of quality indicators. And then in addition, what else it has really done for the hospital is we have taken what we call an approach to shared governance. And what shared governance really is it's really getting a grassroots effort on trying to improve your quality. And so we have nurses on the floor that have unit-based councils, and it's not just the nursing staff, it's the pharmacist and the respiratory therapist and the nurses that get together and they say, you know, we need to make this kind of improvement. And we have right now over 100 different quality improvement projects that are documented and being submitted with our magnet application. But you start reading those and you go, wow, we've really enhanced the quality care in this organization. And that's why we're going after the magnet status.
When you have all those different people at the table and they all play a part in the patient's health care, how do you promote communication? You know, when you go into the hospital, you got so many different hands on you, and you want to make sure that everyone has exactly what they need to take care of that patient.
You know, and that's some of the quality improvements, because you're right, healthcare is very complex. There's, you know, probably 20 or 30 years ago, you could go and get your healthcare from one provider, and that one person knew kind of everything. But now there's nobody who knows everything, including physicians and pharmacists or anybody. So you have to have multidisciplinary teams, and then you have to be able to make sure that communication is there, whether it's through the electronic medical record, whether it's face-to-face. But that communication has to be there to make sure that patient gets that quality care.
Let's take a break. You're listening to Local Matters on KTLO. Welcome back to Local Matters on KTLO. We're visiting once again with CEO of Baxter Regional Medical Center, Mr. Ron Pearson. Ron, I got to tell you, I had a first in my life this year. I spent Thanksgiving Day as a caregiver for my spouse, who was admitted to Baxter Regional Medical Center.
Oh, and
I
got to tell you, oh no.
I know, but you know, things that people don't think about. So I had both my kids with me. My husband's in the hospital. You know, we had all these plans that, you know, it just went crazy last minute.
Yes.
Thanksgiving morning, we wake up bright and early, go see Dad in the hospital. You've got a cafeteria full of workers that are down there that have prepared breakfast. And so we got to have Thanksgiving breakfast as a family. And, you know,
great.
We're in the radio business and we're always at work. So we appreciate, you know, you had all those people there that were taking care, happy to be there. Everyone had a smile on their face telling us happy Thanksgiving. And, you know, it's just those little things that we don't think about that the team at Baxter Regional is always there to help you with.
No, we're always trying to improve that patient experience. And we are so blessed to have so many good people working at the hospital that have the skill sets needed to provide the mm-hmm. clinical quality care. but really have a true heart and a caring heart in them, and want to help people and want to work with people. And so we're really very blessed that way, mm-hmm. and we want to keep that focus.
So as we talk about the holiday season, Christmas Day, just remember there's going to be a whole lot of people still at the hospital at work that day taking care of our patients. And
yes,
for us,
are.
We are very, very grateful for that. Let's talk about the new stuff. Let's talk about what the good and new that's happened in 2019 for Baxter Regional. We always want to know about physicians. We always want to know what new physicians we have, because new physicians oftentimes means new services.
That is correct. And this past year, we brought in 8 new physicians. We're very excited about that. We felt that it was a good year for recruitment, because recruiting physicians is just not an easy task. But Dr. Ben Stevens joined our family clinic on Market back in March timeframe, and we're excited to have him. He seems to be doing real well. And then in October, Dr. Frisbee joined in with him and with Dr. Leslie, and Amanda Martin's over there. And so they have 4 providers and are doing very well, and so we're excited about that. Dr. McNeely joined us in August. He's a anesthesiologist/pain specialist, and so he's in our pain clinic and is already just extremely busy down there in the pain clinic and adding to that and doing very well. Dr. Pingle also joined us in August. He is an emergency room physician, and so if you had to come into our emergency room, you probably have ran into him. And again, he's just doing a real good job for us. And then Dr. Flowers started in August also, mm-hmm. and she's just a bubbly personality. That she joined Dr. Corey Smith in our OB area there in the Medical Arts Center and our Comprehensive Women's Center, and is just off to a real good start there. Then we also have Dr. Veronica Zach, and she is an outpatient psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And so she started in with Dr. Lee at Bradford Square, and she is seeing patients 3 days a week. She's just working part-time for us, but there's such a need for that mm-hmm. outpatient behavioral health that she is really going to be helping us there. So she is a psychiatrist, and she's doing outpatient visits there. Mm-hmm. And then her husband actually joined us a little earlier, Dr. Dimitri Zach, and he is a hematology oncologist, and he's working with Dr. White in our medical arts building, and they're just doing a great job trying to take care of those patients that have cancer. And we have enjoyed Dr. Zach and him joining the staff.
He's a lot of fun.
He is a lot of fun.
He's a hoot. I'm telling you. He is hilarious.
That is very true. He is. And then somebody who has the same type of personality as mm-hmm. Dr. Zach is Dr. Sawinski. And he joined us in September. And he is an inpatient psychiatrist, and he's helping us on the adult unit, but also helps cover some call coverage and things on the geriatric behavioral health unit. So those are the 8 physicians that have joined us this year, and we're just excited to have them on board and believe they'll be a nice addition for the long term here for the community.
You mentioned the pain clinic.
Yes.
Tell us, I'm not real familiar with the pain clinic, and I know that obviously with the opioid epidemic, I mean, all the different regulations that physicians and hospitals are now under when they can administer opioids and different pain medications.
Right.
Tell us about the pain clinic.
You know, you're right. There's a whole change in practice with pain because of the opioids and the realization of what opioids can do to people. I think if you go to our emergency department, you'll find that they really don't give opioids at all. And the amount of opioids that are being prescribed in our pain clinic have been significantly reduced also. But we have several providers there. We have nurse practitioners. We have 3 physicians there. And they have specialized in pain management. So if you do have chronic pain and are not able to function like you have in the past, it's really a very helpful place to go. You know, we see, give or take, but about 100 patients a day in the clinic, just in that pain center. And then we have a procedure area that if the physician feels that you need some type of procedure, a block or something, then that procedure area sees another 100 patients a day. And then we have a satellite pain clinic in Harrison, and that's seeing about 50 patients a day. if you can believe that.
That's a tremendous amount of people.
Yes, it is. And they provide just a great service. They will work with you. Actually, this past year and a half has been an interesting transition because several people have transitioned off of the opioids. And it, you know, if you've been taking some medication for 10 or 15 years and it's been helping you and you're told, well, we're going to transition you, you kind of go, why? This is really helping me. But we can gradually work with you and get you transitioned to some type of other medication that will also help or some type of other procedure.
You also mentioned the Hensley Adult Behavioral Health Center.
Yes.
Is that a one-of-a-kind for the state almost?
No, there's
not many, though.
There's not many.
Okay.
There's not many. It's very hard. What we found was there's definitely a huge need. We had several patients in our emergency department that we could not find beds for because there are so few beds in the state. But there's, you know, like Conway, Little Rock, there are facilities like that. But
nothing close.
Nothing close.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that's to help for the mental health patients.
That is correct. Yes, yes. And, you know, a lot of people say, what's the difference between that and the Hensley Behavioral Health Unit, the for lack of a better word, the Geriatric Behavioral Health Unit? And the biggest difference is age. I mean, if you have a 20-year-old and on the same unit as an 80-year-old, there's significant activities and things that differ. Mm-hmm. So we tried to make those separate and keep the geriatric for a population, give or take, but about 60 and above. Might be somebody 58 or something in there, but right at that 60 and above, and then the 18 to 60-year-old in the adult behavioral health.
Mental health awareness has rapidly grown. Are you seeing that with the admissions of patients to both of those units?
Yes, I think that there's a lot more need out there as far as, number one, there's just a need and we need to find more providers. Mm-hmm. But number two, just a lot more in the awareness of how we can just help each other with that and how we can get people to help, because I think there's still a little bit of that stigma of, well, it's behavioral health and, you know, we don't want to go there. We don't want to touch that. But what we've found is our unit is above the projections that we thought that would come in there. And so we were very busy, and hopefully what we're trying to do is help people so that they can cope on a daily basis.
Are you at liberty to talk about any new physicians that might be coming next year? Breaking news here on Local Matters.
That's right. We always strive to try to bring in 8 or 9 physicians a year. And like I just went over last year's, next year, I feel very comfortable that we have a family practice physician committed to coming in January. So to the community, and we're very excited about him. I try not to release names until they actually show up and are here. But
like anyone who hires someone, until they actually start work, you just really don't want to say anything.
You just
doesn't
never
matter
know
if they're a physician or what.
Exactly.
We're all with you on that one.
That is exactly right. So, but we have several that are either in our pipeline or that are coming, that have signed and say they're coming, and so we're excited about next year.
Is there an area that you guys are focusing on? In the next couple of years, we really need to add here, or we need more help with this service?
I think what we found is that we definitely need to add in the hospitalist area, which a lot of people don't even realize that we have hospitalists, but hospitalists just work in the hospital only, and if you're admitted to the hospital, you're typically taken care of by a hospitalist. And so we're looking to focus on hospitalists. We're looking for family practice physicians. We're looking for cardiology. So there's just kind of a wide variety there. But we are excited because I think we have 3 or 4 that will be coming in next year that we've signed that I'm very excited about.
Well, everyone's been taking that cardiac calcium screening and having it being referred to a cardiologist.
That is true, but that has been such
been
a good
screen.
That has been a great screening. I did not realize the benefit that it would have for people who did the screening, and it's just been a good program.
It would be tremendous if we could work towards more of the screening to prevent than the reacting to taking care of when it happens.
Yes. We all have that mentality of reacting when it happens versus preventing, because I think we feel that it's not going to happen to us, but it will. It just something will happen to us. And so we just need to try to do as much preventative as we can, making sure that we get our screens. I think you'll notice that now when you start going to family practice. Physicians, most of them have really changed their practice to say, you know, are you getting your mammography? Are you getting your GI screen? Are you getting all these preventative things? Because they really do have an impact and can help your health and just reduce the overall cost of healthcare, but also make your lifestyle and quality of life much improved.
A couple other things that you guys have been working on: update to the Da Vinci services. That's the that's the robotic surgery, right? That's what it is.
That is what it is. It's the robotic surgery. We started with the Da Vinci in 2011, and it was a robot and kind of designed for prostate cancer. And they felt that there'd be additional applications for it. And now we have over 11 different surgeons using the Da Vinci. We do about 120 cases in a quarter of the Da Vinci, which is a very high utilization. We had the equipment for about 8 years, and it's interesting. The company has changed the manufacturing of it almost completely and has said that they're not going to support the old one, so we went out and bought a new one, and they are a very expensive piece of equipment.
And the old one was what, like 6 years old at best?
Yeah, 6 to 8 years old, right in there.
It's crazy.
Yes, yeah. Very crazy. But we're real excited. It's actually been delivered, but not quite all the pieces. So I think by the 1st of January, we'll have it up and running, and we're excited to do that. And as a matter of fact, in January, I'm probably letting the cat out of the bag here, but in January, we plan to have another Da Vinci robot in the hospital, like probably in the Lagerbor dining room or something. It hasn't been planned yet, but so that the public can come and see it and see what a Da Vinci robot is and see how it does really work. And so
that's awesome.
We're getting real excited about being able to provide that too.
Patient recovery times are so much faster with the robotic surgery as opposed to the much more invasive deep incision surgery.
That is correct. That's really the gain, is that there's several factors that gain with the robot, but the patient recovery is what the big gain is. Some of the things that help the surgeon is the fact that the magnification is so much better, and he can actually see a lot clearer and better. And then the way the robot arms move and go in, and there's no jitters with the hands or anything. And so it's just it's a very very good procedure, whether it's used with prostates, whether it's used for hysterectomies, whether it's used for hernias. There's just several applications for it now.
How hard does Baxter Regional have to work to continue to attract top talent to a rural healthcare facility?
You know, it's always amazing to me. It's very difficult. I just read an article the other day that, and this is just physicians, but I think it holds true for nurses and for just any type of talent that you're looking for. 1% of the physicians that are finishing their training are looking to practice in a rural area. And so, you know, the problem is you have this small pool. What always amazes me is when people get here, they're always very impressed and very surprised with both the community and the hospital. Mm-hmm. And so then if you can get them here, it's easier. It's a lot easier. But getting them here to even come to look is very difficult.
When you tell them that the closest airport is about 3 hours away. Minor detail.
Yes, that does come up, especially since most of them fly in.
Sure.
That always does come up. Yeah.
Let's take a break. You're listening to Local Matters on KTLO. Welcome back to Local Matters on KTLO. We're visiting with Ron Peterson, CEO, Baxter Regional Medical Center. Hey, we've seen a lot of construction going around the hospital, both inside the hospital and outside. you got all kinds of things going on over there.
We do have all kinds of things going on, and it's great to see the growth and the opportunity. If you look at the outside, of course, if you go along Long Street, which is kind of the backside of the hospital there, you have the brand new hospice facility, which is a beautiful facility and desperately needed. Mm-hmm. It's surprising how it's been open only a couple months and how many people are actually in there with support groups and utilizing mm-hmm. the building. I didn't realize how much of a need we had mm-hmm. for that, but that's just a beautiful building. Then you've
widened that road and added sidewalks too. I love that.
Yes. You know, the city had the mayor, I have to really thank him and give him some thanks. And just he helped us so much there because we were going to put a new parking lot in the back. And he came in and said, well, we'll widen that road and we'll put those sidewalks in, which made that a beautiful place there. Mm-hmm. And if you notice in the back, we have almost doubled the parking back there. Our goal is to have all our employees parking in the back, and we started that just this week, but parking in the back of the hospital to give more room for our patients and visitors to be able to park in the front mm-hmm. and have access in the front. And then probably one of the main reasons why we did it also, though, was because we're really excited to talk about our outpatient surgery center that we're going to be building. And one of the things that you want to do with an outpatient surgery center is you want to make it convenient for patients. Mm-hmm. And so we felt that we wanted to put it in the front of the hospital so we could just tell people to drive up Hospital Drive, look to your left, you'll see the outpatient surgery center, and then you'll have easy mm-hmm. access to drive up there. And so the outpatient surgery center will be about 23,000 square feet. It's going to have 6 operating rooms in it. We're only going to open 4, but then 2 will be there for future expansion. And it's going to be just a beautiful facility, and we're having a groundbreaking for that December 18th at 11 o'clock. So we're very excited.
So later next week, we'll be the groundbreaking for that. Check out KTLO.com. I might have seen a picture of what it's going to look like, and we might have that available after the official groundbreaking.
Well, great. That is great. That is great. And you're right. It's just a few days away. So we're excited about that.
Hey, fun fact. If you are driving around Long Street and you see that brand new employee parking lot back there, drive in there and there's a sign that says Ron Peterson, CEO. That parking spot is the farthest parking spot from the door.
That is correct.
And how many steps from your parking spot to your offices? It says it on the sign.
It says it on the sign, and I park there every day.
You have no idea.
I have no idea. Exactly. I think it says it's 0.25 miles. It's 467 steps or something. But it's the first time in my career that I've had a designated parking spot.
There you go.
I just always believe that I should just park where everybody else parks, and then some members of our administrative team decided that they would designate a spot for me, and I love it. It's worked out great.
Hey, I got to say, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, you're out there. I mean, you're walking the walk, doing the same thing. I think it's awesome. So good on you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
That's a long walk, though. These cold December, it's dark when you walk to your car and there's precipitation. I mean, that can be nasty, but the hospital has done great services. There's a van that can help shuttle employees back and forth. So you guys are trying all the little things you can to make things easier for everybody.
That is correct, because we want to make it easier for our patients and our visitors, but we also want to make it easy for our employees. Mm-hmm. And so we are providing bus service, and then our volunteers have also helped with the shuttle, also with mm-hmm. their shuttle service. So it has, it's been a little bit of a transition, but overall it's worked out really good. If you are driving back there, the parking lot, I think, looks very nice. But also, drive up to the top of the parking lot. I'm surprised at how nice the hospital looks from the back from up there. It's a pretty view.
Mm-hmm. And Barney always calls it the beacon on the hill.
That is right. And when you're back there, you might see some additional construction, which nobody ever really realizes because it's kind of an infrastructure. But we have kind of outgrown our capacity for our electrical needs throughout mm-hmm. the hospital. And so we're splitting our electrical power that comes into the hospital and we're adding two additional backup generators. And what this does, and hopefully then what it means, is you will never notice it. But if you're on the operating table or in the cath lab or something, and the power goes out, and you never know when the power is going to go out, mm-hmm. you always want backup so that you can finish the case and make sure that the patient is okay. And so we have that backup, but we're kind of at capacity with that. So we split our power lines and we bought two new generators, and that puts us down to about 50% capacity. So we'll be able to continue to grow and add more technology and equipment. And you know, that infrastructure that nobody sees and nobody will ever know, we cost about $1.3 million.
Huge investment.
Amazing.
He said we'd never notice it. I'm pretty sure if you were laying on the operating table and the power went off and that didn't work, I'm pretty sure we would notice it.
That is when you would notice it, if it did not work. That is exactly right. That is exactly right.
One other big project going on. If you have walked through the lobby at Baxter Regional Medical Center, there's a lot going on there. Admissions is complete. It looks fantastic. Love what you guys have done at admissions. And now you're working on both lobbies and then the ER. You're working on one lobby now, and then the ER lobby is next.
That is correct. It's kind of been a three-year process, because just the way we try to work our money and try and have money to be able to spend on that. Some people have said, well, the old lobby looked good. Why don't you keep that? We had pieces of the floor were coming up. It needed repair. It's been 15 years since, mm-hmm. I think, at least, mm-hmm. since that lobby was remodeled. And it really looks nice. We're trying to bring in the natural colors of the Ozarks, and so we're putting some stone in there. We're putting some green tones and brown tones to bring in that natural look. And if you haven't had a chance, please come and take a look. But by the end of December, it will be done. So that's when I'd really recommend it. Most people know this, but the skylights that run along both lobbies, they are starting to leak, and so they needed to be replaced. And so it's interesting. We ordered the skylights back in March, I think it was, and they were supposed to be here by August, and they're still not here. But the skylights on the main entrance are supposed to be here next week, so next week we're hoping to replace the skylight mm-hmm. in the lobby.
Hey, go check out the lobby. While you're there, check out the Pinkadilly gift shop. I mean, if you're looking for some last-minute Christmas gifts, they have beautiful stuff in there. Speaking of someone who's spent a lot of time at the hospital this year, feels like.
Yes. It's, you know, our volunteers do such a great job, and that's one area that they focus on. And you're right. There are several gifts there. My wife volunteers there.
She sure does.
And I always tell her that's the most expensive place you could possibly volunteer, because she always comes home with something.
One final thing, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention it. Congratulations to everyone at Baxter Regional Medical Center. This year, a fantastic award was achieved, being named one of the top employers for the state of Arkansas.
Well, thank you. We're very proud of that, and it really tells you what type of employees we have, and we're so blessed to have such good people working for us, caring about our patients, and also making it a great place to work, and we just love that. So thank you.
The cornerstone of this community, Baxter Regional Medical Center. Merry Christmas, Ron.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, Heather.
Thanks to all the great people at Baxter Regional Medical Center. We'll see you again in 2020. You've been listening to Local Matters on KTLO.